You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to this, another edition of the Underdog Football Show. My name is Josh Norris, joined, as always, on the far right by Hayden Winks. And today, as I mentioned, 4 weeks are down. We have 14 more to go, but it feels like the fantasy football world and sky is collapsing on our shoulders after a summer full of fun and a little bit of drafting. We have some great guests here to break it all down for us and how things are going well, how they're going right, and how they're going wrong. We start off on the top row with Eric Beinfor of Roto Grinders and Spike Week. Eric, how are you doing, buddy?
I am great. The chat has already got me really amped up for this show. They're pumping my Darrington Evans bags. They are blaming, they're getting us a Thanks Leone reference already for why we are late. Because Leone is late, so it's
they're not wrong.
Yeah. Pretty perfect start.
Let's pivot over to Mike Leone. You just finished a show with Adam Levitan. How rude of Adam to keep you late for this guest appearance.
And Slim, the nerve.
Slim Mike Leone, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. You know, I wish some of my best ball teams were in better shape here, which we're going to talk about. I did 65 in the Best Ball Mania, and right now I've got 10 out of 65 or 9 out of 65 advancing, which is a little below randomness, but I got a bunch of teams in third place. But I think it'll be fun to talk with Eric how we think. I think Eric and I both structure our teams where they're probably going to benefit from like the chaos of the season. So hopefully, you know, those win rates go up.
What about my teams, Leone?
How are your teams doing, Peter? I don't know.
So only your two teams benefit from the chaos of the season?
Just me and Eric. I don't know what, you know, you've got too much Travis Etienne probably. I don't know.
Jeez, just let me speak for myself. No, I am glad to be here because I've noticed Nick Rudman, he uses this term almost like a subtweet pejorative of the streamers win one here. So I'm glad that we were actually able to round up all the streamers here to fight back against Redmond here.
Love it. Pete, is this around the time every single Tuesday morning where you go and finally like go through every single one of your best ball lineups and like project which ones can win the $1 million in the year?
No, because I'll have the SWAT team kicking down my door if I even go to look at them. I had to beg for just 1 hour of parole just to do this show. So no, I'm still on heightened alert.
Absolutely love it. And hey, now even say hello to you. Everything good over there on the West Coast?
Everything's good. Let's talk about these guys.
All right. Yeah, let's talk about these guys. Again, today the outline a bit of the show. General conversation on what is going right, what is going wrong. We also have the top five scoring teams and drafts so far in Best Ball Mania 2. Cannot wait to break down those rosters with everyone here. Obviously, the top 10 scorers at each position and some other data is rolling along as we go throughout the show. And as always, leave your comments and everything in the chat, and I'm sure we're going to randomly pull them up. Question for you. We can all joke, but 4 weeks of information is way more information than we had when we were drafting in August, in July, in June, even some in May. What do we do with this 4 weeks of information? How has it kind of impacted every day that you wake up and say, man, I had this opinion in August and I wish I had slightly altered it?
the biggest thing is not necessarily altering specific opinions about like players or even necessarily like any draft structure. You know, like Leone talked about he and I, not Peter, drafting structurally, you know, in certain ways that in theory we benefit from the NFL season. But I really think that the thing that I've learned the most is just structure. And you can win with any structure. We kind of talked about this all this offseason, right? Whether you prefer, you know, heavy running back to start or zero running back or some kind of hybrid, which have a million names, as we all know, there's like, you could be looking really good right now. Like I have teams that have early running backs that look great right now because I structured them appropriately. I also have teams with early running backs that don't look very good because you may not hit on every player, but as long as you're structuring your teams appropriately, I feel like right now that's been like kind of the, you know, my biggest, I don't know even know if it's a lesson, but lesson learned from the first 4 weeks.
Leone, you opened this conversation by saying some of your teams should pay off better in like the middle third or, you know, the second half of the season. Is that just all age model stuff? Is that just with later running backs in terms of that position breaking down and those selections later on in your drafts will end up paying off and that's when you can see a significant rise?
It's mostly wishful thinking that these teams will do better. So like one example right off the bat, I have 0% David Montgomery and I have like 2x the field on Damian Williams. So that's a very specific example, but those teams are going to flip. I probably draft more handcuffy type running backs than most people. So as the season goes on, that's something that's going to adjust. I also have a lot of late round rookie wide receivers whose roles, you know, over time we know grow. They're not all going to hit, but you know, I'm also probably not going to take zeros from, you know, Josh Palmer and Diami Brown, like all year long, hopefully, you know, Dwayne Eskridge, some of those types, maybe I will. But the hope is, you know, even Rondale Moore, though, who's my highest exposure player, he's shown flashes, but he hasn't been able to get on the field a ton yet, but that's not a surprise early on. That's going to change over the course of the season. So I think there's that. And then just part of it's not even so much what I did as much as I think it is other people probably making mistakes in their lineups where they maybe are running hot on picking the correct players early on, but they're not structured right. Like at a certain point, especially like when the bye weeks hit and injuries mount up, I think they're going to take a lot more zeros at positions than I'm probably going to.
Pete, when you review the last 4 weeks and the entire summer, other than missed opportunities for day drinking and on weekends, what goes on through your head?
Get yourself a man who can day drink and draft at the same time. Those aren't mutually exclusive. Gosh.
Good brand to have.
Yeah. I do think it is interesting tabbing through the structures of my teams that are advancing, and there are all kinds of different ones. You know, there's a decent balance of three quarterback teams. I have a bunch of like 2-4-10-2 teams that are doing well. So I don't know if I have any structural takeaways, and it's like a very self-selective sample size, right? Where I drafted pretty similar structures for most of my teams. So it's hard to know, you know, within that cohort, it's just going to be, well, which one of those structures have the best players on it. I do think though, not unlike what Leone and Bimeford did with their teams, with a lot of my rosters, like Nyheim Hines being one of my highest owned guys, Kenneth Gainwell became a late surge guy for me. I have a lot of teams that are kind of buoyed by some of this pass catching production, JD McKissick teams as well. And then I'm just kind of waiting for the Javonte Williams explosion, some of those kind of younger guys that we're hoping to break out later in the season. So I'm in the same boat where I feel good if I'm, you know, advancing 20% of my teams and then hovering within striking distance on the others, knowing that my teams will get stronger as we go.
Yeah. Just when you guys are talking, I'm like, and visually going through these top five teams that we're about to look at, because you guys haven't looked at them yet. And I would say structural drafting doesn't necessarily apply to the top five teams so far.
It's canceled.
It is canceled. Pick the best player season. This is a, in fact, one might have four quarterbacks on their team, but we will get to those in just a moment. Hayden, you and I talk way too much, so maybe I shouldn't ask you so many questions during the show, but I am going to bring up this one. There were so many players that, like, I tune into Peter streams, Leone streams, Eric streams of like regrets that I had. Like DeAndre Swift later on was like an awesome player that people brought up as, hey, his team's going to suck, but his strengths equal a spot where he's going to have success and put up points almost in regardless of game script, you know, Brandon Cook, so on and so forth. When you look at the last 4 weeks, Hayden, what goes through your mind, first of all?
I think the biggest takeaway right now is that the running backs, like the top 10 scoring running backs, were primarily the top three round running backs. And I think like that's where like the question is, okay, is that sustainable throughout the entire course of the season? Because if so, the teams that win RB, like anchor RB or two running back starts, I think they're going to have a huge advantage just because most of the, it's like harder to find the breakout running back right now. It's like Zach Moss, Cordarrelle Patterson, but like some of those running backs don't feel as sustainable. So I think it's just going to come down to like the health of those running backs and which ones can kind of hold up. Cause like Eckler, second rounder, Saquon Barkley, second rounder, even Joe Mixon's kind of has that workload. Nick Chubb has a path to it. All those second round running backs look kind of good to me compared to the second round wide receivers. So it's only 4 weeks of data, and we know that wide receivers have a higher chance of like holding up throughout the entire course of the season.
Yeah, and I know some of you have done best ball resurrection drafts, and by the way, that's up on the site right now. $10 entry starts in week six, goes through week 18, week 17, and it's one where in the summer we could all like come up with draft picks and do so many drafts every single day and come up with like a story to tell ourselves of why every single selection was going to hit. And Eric, I know you've been doing a whole bunch of best ball resurrection drafts. There, regardless of your opinions, you're going to hate some of the picks that you have to make. Like, you can't do that now with this 4 weeks of information, because either from a role standpoint, a snap standpoint, a bad team standpoint, you're going to have to take some players that you absolutely are disgusted by.
Yeah, I've done a handful of streams now and definitely done a bunch of resurrection drafts on my own time. And what you said is like, couldn't be more clear. The types of players that you have to take at the ends of drafts, even when you get to like to the middle of drafts. So one big takeaway, quarterback, right? So like we have, you know, victory lap season, I guess Sam Darnold was like my favorite late round quarterback. And so I had guys like that to default to at the back ends of drafts, right? Name a guy. If you like Derek Carr, who's playing pretty well, if you like Daniel Jones, whatever, there was these late round guys. And now anyone that performed well that we feel good about moving forward goes up 5, 6, 7 rounds on these drafts. And that, you know, quarterback was my example, but that's across every single position. And so it's a really interesting kind of balancing act to where you're taking guys where you probably don't feel comfortable about them, but maybe you are higher on them preseason, with also understanding like maybe something has changed about that player. It's a really kind of a fun decision point in those drafts.
Okay. Leone, top 10 running backs you can see on the screen drafted in August by the end of Best Ball Mania 2. On the right side, in you know comparison with our ADP, on the left side is where they are in scoring right now. Which one stands out to you as either the most shocking or one that we could see it changing throughout the season that you still have the most hope for?
It's a trap, Leone. Don't answer it.
It's, A.J. Brown, 78th. Is absolutely just destroying my teams. But I think that's something that, I mean, he hasn't been put on IR, which gives you some optimism that, he's not going to be out too long. And we've seen Tennessee even last week, you know, they struggle against the Jets. Like they might have to air the ball out a little bit more than people think. So he definitely sticks out the most to me as a guy that I'm not too worried about. Him and Kittle too. I think George Kittle, like clearly we've seen why Waller should have gone ahead of Kittle. I had them neck and neck. I drafted more Kittle than Waller early and evened it up. So like I was wrong on that, but I still think we're going to see big spike weeks out of Kittle. We haven't seen them yet. I mean, that's the hard part too with ceiling. I mean, even last year, Darren Waller, I remember for ETR, it felt like we were over projecting him by 3 points every single week. And then he scores 40 points against the Jets and he gets it all back, you know, in 1 week. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see something similar happen with Kittle this year.
Peter.
Yeah. Well, one thing that stands out to me, and this was an idea, and I'm pretty sure I've talked about it with Leone and Bime Four on streams, was just how within the top 25 players outside of Christian McCaffrey, like a lot of these guys is like overall season point total ceilings are pretty similar. And yet we get so anchored to the specific ADP that the guys continue to go in the same general pocket. So when you look at a CMC, Dalvin Cook, Kamara, you know, three guys who are, you know, routinely going off the board in the top three, like your teams are behind there where if you wanted to draft Aaron Jones at second overall or third overall, and then just see what kind of texture of players you can get with him on the 2-3 turn, you're not actually sacrificing that many projected points. And yet probably very few people did it. I did it way more with drafting wide receivers, you know, second and third, but I think it does go to show, like, I really think you can throw out that ADP after CMC with those first, you know, 15, 16 picks and get as funky as you want.
Yeah. Hey, and I remember doing a draft. God, I can't even remember when it was, but with Ryan Hodge, and we got to like pick three, pick four. And he's like, I'm going Austin Eckler here. And, you know, that gives you constructions where you could have gotten Austin Eckler. And as Peter's alluding to, someone in round two, that that combination, that it pays off maybe in week 16, week 17, you might be the only person with that. So I think that that's a really strong point as we look towards Best Ball Resurrection, obviously even next summer with Best Ball Mania 3.
In the spirit of some argument here, my pushback against that would be, you know, your top priority, I think, is like, and Eric and I disagree on this a little bit, but like, you really want to get out of your league. And I really think,
yeah,
like, you're giving, even though, like Peter said, it's pretty fragile. Like, if Alvin Kamara is third or Austin Eckler is third, that's true that it's fragile. But if you're drafting a lot of teams, I still think you want to maximize, you know, your point totals across your potential point total across the board. And there's going to be options to get Eckler when you have the eighth overall pick, when you can't get Kamara there. So I do think I still have a tough time actually doing that. I'm a little bit less worried about my team being unique too. The ADPs, this contest launching in what, early May, like the ADPs changed so much over the course of the season. Even Kamara himself, you could have gotten, you know, eighth or so early in the off season. So I guess I'm a little bit more boring in terms of that. I'm less worried about unique and more worried about jamming, I guess, the better quote unquote players. But I do agree with Peter that, like, you very clearly see that we're not necessarily that's very difficult to predict.
Right.
One counter.
Go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say one small counter to that is that, you know, if it's a guy like, let's say Leone, someone you were lower on than market. So you were maybe going to naturally be underweight just because, you know, that's how your, you know, kind of rankings played out. I don't think you need to worry about it too much, but like Peter and I did a stream close to the end of draft season where we took Davante Adams at 2, I think it was. And you know, there was a little, you know, people had pushback on the Davante Adams thing because of the Rodgers stuff, but set aside the name, it was a player we're high on. We want to have our requisite exposure to Davante Adams. But if you always draft him at his exact ADP or just a little bit after, you're also then going to continue to have the exact same types of players paired with Davante Adams, right? So if I want 20 Davante Adams teams, I don't want 15 of them to also have the same second round player and then X, you know, same amount third round player. So I do think there's a little marriage into marrying up exactly how you go about that. I don't think is nailed down, or you don't have to do the Davante Adams at 2 thing. You could change up second, third, fourth round.
I was saying, like, would you have taken Ridley at 2? You know, like, Adams is like the top receiver, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, so Adams, Hill, Diggs, but like, would you have taken Ridley? You know, I guess
no. The wide receivers and Kelsey, I think, and maybe that's just where I and Pete leaned a little bit to those guys, and that's why that strategy worked for us a little bit more. But I would be like Tyreek, Kelsey, Diggs, Devontae. I was willing to kind of play those games with those guys because I was going to have a lot of them, you know.
But it's like the way I was thinking about it too. And I do think if you're drafting 150 of these teams, it does definitely point in the direction of being patient and you can kind of pick your spots more. But like a simple way I think about it, and I do this for DFS a lot too. It's like, okay, say if Kamara is going 3 in every draft and Eckler was going whatever, 11th or 12th, the ADP is saying that, like, what, 99% of the time, like, Alvin Kamara outscores him. And so it's like, shouldn't you get your own exposures closer to what you think that true percentage is? Maybe it's 70-30, so that you're trying to balance it in that way.
Yeah. It might be more of like a reflective take and like maybe one that's not fair now. But I also feel like, shouldn't we have seen something like Austin Eckler coming in that more so than maybe a Alvin Kamara, in that we believe in more the pieces in Austin Eckler? And if we were, you know, had our own personal player evaluation and team evaluation, then if he was going to get the goal line carries and the red zone touches, then wasn't just the system, the environment, always going to be better than what Alvin Kamara was bringing to the table? Like, I also think that there's a way in hindsight to say, okay, this path was there. And if you just believe that firmly, which can be tough based on these ADPs, then you'd just be having Austin Eckler in all of your lineups instead of someone, you know, like a Saquon who's going ahead of him for much of the season, like a Dalvin Cook, like an Alvin Kamara.
I think the Alvin Kamara stuff seems kind of hindsight, though, because like he's always been a pass catcher, and like all of a sudden now he's not when there's no other weapons. Like, that makes no sense to me. So I think that's kind of unfair to Kamara. And Kamara could have a monster season once the offense gets better with Michael Thomas coming
back. Also, maybe the better example is like early in the offseason, like Jonathan Taylor was going ahead of him, or Nick Chubb. Like, and then as we got towards the end of the year, obviously, Austin Eckler got to the point when he was obviously being drafted ahead of those other names.
Yeah. I also, you know, I think I forgot who was tweeting about it. Like, if you could know one thing and like go back, but I would have liked to know the Chargers offense was going to be super up tempo and one of the highest pass rates over expectation. You know, I would have liked, I didn't know Staley was a shark, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I knew there was a chance, but that's had a really big impact on Eckler. Like, the goal line stuff matters too. And that was kind of a known facet of like, if he gets this, it could really turn out well, but the environment is great, you know, and that applies to like Mike Williams too, who's probably, you know, if we redraft, probably goes in, you know, the third, fourth round.
Pete, talk to me about this. You see Jonathan Taylor down there as the running back 10 drafted, now running back 19 in scoring. Meanwhile, over in the middle column with wide receivers, there are certainly some who haven't lived up to their expectations. Calvin Ridley, you know, at wide receiver 25, CeeDee Lamb, wide receiver 30. But like that, is there something to the wide receiver 25, wide receiver 30 helping you more than the running back 19 every single week? Do you get what I'm saying? Like, the despite both being disappointments, one at one position, the drop-off might be different at, you know, wide receiver versus running back. Does that question make sense?
Yeah, and I think that was a thing, too, that was a hot topic of conversation in the offseason last year, you know, with guys like Zeke and, you know, guys who paid off on their draft costs or were like even, but they weren't actually big ROI league winners for you there. So I think that's always something in consideration. Another thing that jumps out to me when looking at some of these wide receiver stuff and talking about being price sensitive, and I always had in my head in the offseason, Sean Siegel always saying the way to play the 49ers is through Debo Samuel because there's so much uncertainty to it, and just take the cheapest one over Ayuk. And I'm like, no, I want to keep drafting Ayuk. And looking at some of those things, like you can see kind of Keenan, you look at the gap between Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. And obviously we couldn't fully predict the Mike Williams jump, but just wondering, should we be tilting our exposures in more ambiguous situations to the cheaper guy, just because the upside's so much higher and the path to failure becomes smaller?
My biggest takeaway real quick, Josh, is just, I think that going into this, we all agree that wide receiver talent is like easier to identify than running back talent. Cause like it's a, like I think that just like talent wins out in general. And I think that we're probably better off just identifying that talent in general. So if we know that the round 3 through round 10 wide receivers are coming, and like that's exactly what it's been, the Debo, Mike Williams, Cooper Kupp, all those guys just smash. And this happens literally every single year. And we all knew that Cooper Kupp can play. Mike Williams had the pedigree. We know that Debo can play, all these type of guys. It's very easy to see that path. Why aren't we trying to maximize our entire draft strategy around just those players eventually breaking out? And to me, that would just point to making sure you get running back to start, and then just printing out all the wide receivers. Cause this range historically just dominates. We're already seeing it. This player and all the players that are breaking out, no one's like, oh, Mike Williams is breaking out. Like, how the hell did that happen? Everyone's like, yep, of course he's breaking out. Cooper Kupp the same way. So I think we need to take that into consideration. We're looking at roster construction. Adam Levitan said it best. He said, at some point, we have to take a running back. And I think right now, I would rather do that in the second round and making sure I'm maximizing the breakouts of like the mid-round wide receivers.
Yeah, my counter to that for people, and I don't think you were saying this, Hayden, but my people would say like, oh, I have to take a running back in the first round. My counter to that methodology would be, we're talking about best ball and specifically best ball tournaments, right? Like Leone brought up, I'm more thinking about how do I win week 17 as opposed to how do I advance teams. But you're not hurting yourself by taking Tyreek Hill right in the first round in terms of your expectation of advancement. And so people will say like, oh, I have to take Zeke in the first round. and Zeke could be fine, but Tyreek Hill could be the guy you need to win. Like, we look what Tyreek Hill has done twice already this year. Like, if you get to the championship game and Tyreek Hill does this again, almost 200 yards and three touchdowns, guess what? You're probably going to need Tyreek Hill, you know, right. And if he's the wide receiver one on the season. So I would say my biggest takeaway is pretty much what you said. Like, my preferred strategy was more of like an anchor running back strategy, but not being it tied to like the first round or even the second round, right? I had anchored DeAndre Swift teams, or like if you liked, name a guy, right? Chris Carson or something like that. Structuring teams, but not being tied to, oh, it has to be first round running back, because we know the importance of running back.
And that's what, yeah, that was a thing too that I started playing around with a lot more in the middle of draft season, was sticking within the overall structure, you know, the anchor, the hyper fragile, but mixing and matching where you do that, because it goes back to the ADP thing. Structural draft strategies, just for our brains, are so much easier if we do them by the letter of the law. Hyper fragile, draft three running backs in a row, boom, I'm done. It just like eliminates the decision making. So I think we tend to gravitate toward that. And so I was trying to force myself out of my comfort zone to do that with like, okay, maybe I go hyper fragile, but I'm taking the three running backs rounds 3, 4, 5 in the dreaded dead zone, but I still have Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill to start my team. So that, I think, is a really good thing to kind of have your cake and eat it too, is accomplishing the structure, but getting a different texture of players you won't get if you're always drafting three running backs to start.
Okay, before we get to the players, the 10 most players rostered on first place teams and then last place teams in each Best Ball Mania 2 league, I think it'd be fun, because obviously that would give away who's going to be on these top five teams. let's dive into these top five. Do we want to go first through fifth, or do we want to go fifth? Let's go first through fifth. Why not?
First through fifth. Let's do it.
I'm terrified what these answers are going to be.
Eric, I don't think you're on here. just for now, who knows? We can check back in you know, week 8, week 9.
If I was on there, I would make sure people knew about it.
Pete, I would be fascinated if you drafted within these guys this summer. The first up with 676 points. And by the way, we also have the dates drafted.
Oh, I love that.
That's the first place team. Would anyone like to guess which day around the summer it was drafted?
June 28th.
September 1st.
Michael Leone is correct. It is June 28th.
Are you kidding me?
Are you cheating?
It is literally June 28th. No, Leone, it is. This is from Goat Meat King in the three spot.
I'm signing off this show. I'm Costanza in this.
That was ridiculous. I don't know how you did that. So here we go. Out of the three spot, the three names that you're going to see very, very common here: Derrick Henry, Cooper Kupp, and Deebo Samuel. Let's talk through this. So out of the 1-on-3, it's Derrick Henry round 1, Darren Waller round 2, Justin Jefferson round 3, DJ Moore round 4, Cooper Kupp round 5, and Kyler Murray round 6. So I think that structure in the first 6, or let's even pull in 7 and 8 there after this, but first 6, it's one running back, one tight end, both your onesie positions at Kyler Murray, and then three awesome wide receivers in Justin Jefferson, DJ Moore, and Cooper Kupp. And then in round 7 and round 8, you're not drafting for depth. They still drafted for the starting lineup in Deebo Samuel as your flex and Damien Harris, imagine that, as your running back too in fantasy drafts. These thoughts.
I mean, it's a perfect team in that the structure is exactly what you want: elite running back, elite tight end, and then you just absolutely hammer wide receivers. He also, of course, got extremely good values, Justin Jefferson there, Kyler Murray, where he got them. So, you know, deviating from structure there with Kyler, maybe when you get an insane deal like that, and even though he didn't have the stack, and I'd be curious to see if he ended up getting a Christian Kirk or Rondell Moore on the back. But to me, this is like a perfect structural draft, and then you just bink hitting all the league winners so far.
Yeah, definitely.
I noticed that you didn't say
that. In my experience, the teams I drafted early were a lot better than the teams I drafted
same.
Late.
Hmm.
What's
it's
that,
a good, it's a good mix of these, by the way. We'll get some more in a second. Kyler Murray is the quarterback 4, who is now obviously, I think, the quarterback 2 or quarterback 3 at the moment. Okay, we'll scroll down, because a conversation Hayden and I, and I'm sure all you guys had in your streams when reviewing success rate Leone back in Best Ball Mania 1, was the draft is really like 10 or 11 rounds. And like, then if you just get a couple usable weeks with those players, especially in rounds 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18, then that's how you're drafting correctly. Again, this is only through 4 weeks. There's 18 weeks in the season. But you continue on with Marquise Brown, who is, you know, leading the league in 20 plus yard catches, it feels like right now. A usable week so far, whenever you need them, from Melvin Gordon for sure, especially in week one. But then you have some absolute zeros. Gus Edwards will not get a single point for this team for the rest of the season. Gabriel Davis, sorry, Leone, is the wide receiver 4 for the Buffalo Bills. Anthony Firkser, the late round tight end that a lot of people invested in. Rashad Perryman, thanks, Leone, in round 16. Philip Lindsay, round 17. Yeah. Ty Johnson, round 18. So while this person is number one through 4 weeks, I don't know how many impact weeks we can get from these later on picks in rounds 10 plus.
That is definitely, I think, a concern for this, as far as can your team get stronger as the season goes on versus holding on for dear life. It's obviously going to be a very good team, but I do agree. Like, you don't see a lot of kind of breakout potential or scenarios that could really supercharge this team down the stretch.
Yeah. You need an injury to a Bills wide receiver. Firkser could still be okay. Like as a backup tight end, like he's fine. But yeah, Lindsay's stuff doesn't look great. No one in Houston's going to score fantasy points at running back.
But conversely, like if something happens with Javonte Williams and you have Melvin Gordon as like a clear running back one, Marquise Brown can keep this rolling. Christian Kirk in the slot with one of the best high powered offenses in the NFL. So like, even if you have 3 or 4 absences as the season rolls along, so are other teams in this draft. And I think that this absolutely, while they have the stone nuts in again, Cooper Kupp, Debo Samuel, and Derrick Henry, that'll be a comparison for the rest of these teams too, because many of them have them as well. So, and Pete, this was a fast draft. That was also a fast draft. All right, let's jump now.
Are you trying to rub that in or something?
No. I just know that you were a slow draft guy, correct?
Yeah, so what's your point, Josh?
There are three fast drafts and 2 slow drafts. I'm just trying to give the people information out there.
No, but you tossed in, hey, Pete. Couldn't help but notice that the best team was drafted in a fast draft, which you couldn't make any goddamn time for.
All right. I'll do a better job. This was also a fast draft, and that was 676 points so far through 4 weeks. So everyone out there that can compare for their own personal drafts. Let's pull up this one. Here we go. On the fly. So this is Joe Cat 44. Does that ring a bell to anyone? No.
Nope.
No. This is out of the 2 slot. Once again.
What date? What date, Leone? Come on.
August, yeah, what date, Leone?
August 2nd.
August 18th. You're good. A random skill that Leone has of identifying when drafts were based on the draft board.
I think Leone hacked into your servers and I've been reviewing this.
What's my IP address, Leone?
Leone, do you go to like the carnivals and pick out how many jelly beans are in the thing?
Leone spent a summer guessing people's weight at the carnivals.
I'm giving away
those stuffed animals that people paid $10 for that cost $3. So out of the 102, again, Derrick Henry, Justin Jefferson, Darren Waller, Cooper Kupp, and Debo Samuel. Adding in Lamar Jackson here, James Robinson, Zach Moss, combining Lamar and Jalen Hurts.
This team's so good.
Oh, wow. I'm getting hot under the collar here.
Stacking Lamar Jackson with Marquise Brown, having, Emmanuel Sanders, McKissick. Darrington Evans in round 15.
Oh,
wow. Kenny Gainwell in round 17 is really paying off as well. Eric, immediate thoughts.
Eric, immediate thought. What does Jared Goff do for this team?
I wasn't going to say it. I wasn't going to say it. I've also somehow made it a public thing that I think Jared Goff was like, if you took Jared Goff, not even just on this team, like in general, why were you taking Jared Goff? And he just keeps putting up monster game after monster game. So I'm definitely eating an L on that one. But I think this team is better than the first one.
Yeah.
it is, and taking the right kinds of late round running backs with Gainwell, and, you know, no offense to Philip Lindsay and such, but like, just I wouldn't do the three quarterback thing. Is there three quarterbacks on this team? Yeah. Hurts, yep. Lamar. So I wouldn't do Jared Goff.
Especially with Hurts and Lamar. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Jared Goff was a wasted pick. But outside of that, I mean, it also triggers me that seventh round James Robinson is on the second best team in Best Ball Mania, because that was not a guy that I was that I was taking. But I mean, look, this is what happens when you structure your teams well. Sometimes you just hit on James Robinson's situation with ETN or whatever.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just like looking at the late round running backs and going through some of my teams that are doing well, you know, Peter was talking about not being stubborn on like the ADP early, but like you look at the mixture of guys late, there are guys that we did not like that have been really good zero RB picks and vice versa, and guys that we like that are really good zero RB picks. So just like mixing and matching, you know, like I had a good chunk of Gainwell, but like I refused to draft Leonard Fournette, and I took a bunch of Rojo, and like, I would, if I had that, like even just split evenly, which given the uncertainty of the situation might've made sense, like I would be in a lot better shape. So, but then, you know, you still want some of the upside guys. So, and just how quickly things can change. Like Zach Moss goes from being inactive to having three straight weeks where his score counted for you, you know, like it's pretty wild.
How do we feel about seven running backs, talking about structure? Seven running backs on this team.
Yeah, that's an issue, I think. I didn't notice that there was...
He's way short on wide receivers between that and the three quarterback.
Well, as I kind of like, I don't believe this will hold up the entire season, but a lot of these teams, will get to them, it's like six wide receivers or seven wide receivers. And you're basically anchoring on those wide receivers. I think on average, if you're looking at this, that's not the way to play it. But when we're talking about like a robust RB team three and you're out, some of these teams are kind of doing that with like five in the first 10 rounds and then they're getting the hell out of there. I don't think that's a sharp strategy in over time, but I think that there is like some upside element. I just don't think that you should be doing it all the time.
Well, not with like Derrick Henry too, like as your first round pick. You shouldn't be probably taking seven running backs with Henry.
I think the half PPR stuff makes a huge difference. Like I think that you can sneak in with like getting running backs into your flex in half PPR compared to like the full PPR stuff. I think that's been like a kind of underrated thing after reviewing all these teams too.
Yeah, because it's touchdowns, right? Like even when we Josh had the like top X picks or whatever, like even if you looked at like those wide receivers, like Stephon Diggs is not off to a hot start because he's not scoring touchdowns. I'm not worried about my Stephon Diggs teams. You know,
right. He
is totally fine. I think he leads the league in air yards, right? But he's just, you know, not scoring touchdowns. You know, Josh Jacobs scored two touchdowns in one game. Sam Darnold leads the freaking NFL in rushing touchdowns. Like some of these things are not going to sustain, but in half point PPR, you see the power of touchdowns, which also shows you like that how insane this tournament is going to be to win, which in turn means how important structure is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at like the Cooper Kupp versus Robert Woods dynamic in all these drafts. This one, it's, you know, 3-7 Robert Woods went, 4-11 Cooper Kupp went, Brandon Ayuk went at the 4-8. Debo Samuel went at the 6-11. Again, I don't even want to throw hindsight in here. It's so difficult to like get the player evaluation, the team evaluation, because especially on the Rams, like it was changing. Things were changing with Matthew Stafford, but those were the like, such drastic differences because again, all these teams were just through 4 weeks, have those stone three players of Cooper Kupp, Debo Samuel, and obviously Derrick Henry, but that's a huge call taking Derrick Henry to the 102 over Dalvin Cook. I mean, that never happened. That never happened this summer. So, okay. Next one, Leone. It was 660. That one had 667 points. So that's only 9 points behind. I need to know how many points
the team scored, and I'll tell you what date it was drafted.
Okay. So
this is the worst party trick.
This one was also a fast draft. It was 660 points from NDOFT ILT. No, NDOS ILT.
I think this is an August draft, too.
Nah, it's not.
Okay. I'm done. I'm out. It's over. Okay.
It's okay. I'm trying to open the draft board. Here we go. This is a 7-3 draft. So the day before July 4th festivities, this person logged on.
Tell us what he was wearing this day, Josh.
Out of the 104. Derrick Henry and Najee Harris. So that's our first running back start here. Then Terry McLaurin, Cooper Kupp, Kyler Murray, Odell Beckham, Debo Samuel. I also believe This is our first non-Darren Waller team in the top three as well. Second James Robinson selection. And then Michael Carter, Corey Davis, Melvin Gordon, and the second quarterback as Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Who's the tight end here?
The tight end here are Austin Hooper and Zach Ertz in round 16 and round 17.
Wow. Gosh.
This team's not holding up. Breaking news, this team's not holding up.
I don't know. We also have a round 15 AJ Green, Hayden, so hold your breath.
That's what I was going to say earlier when Overzet was talking about, let's see if they stacked Kyler. He said Rondale and Christian Kirk, but he forgot to leave out the Cardinals' best wide receiver.
It's hard so to biased. Remember him. He's such a footnote in the game of life that I never remember.
This is not AJ Green specifically, but the one thing I'm trying to wrap my head around too is like our perception of upside in these drafts. And like, some of the players I thought had the most upside got steamed so much, like Ayuk, you know, he went in like the fourth round by the end, and I would have slammed him way more than I did if he went in the sixth round, and you know, he still can get there. But like Gibson got moved way up. And there were some guys that hit, like Cooper Kupp was a pretty high upside guy that, you know, we started trying to take 3-4 turns. CeeDee Lamb got moved up and he's looking good. So it's both ways, but like that was really hard for me to wrap my head around, is like, at what point does the cost outweigh the fact that this is a person in a vacuum that looks like they have a ton of upside, a lot of breakout potential? And then on the back end of draft, you know, guys who fell, like I keep giving, Justin Herzig was giving me so much shit for my Hunter Renfro shares. But like guys that are going to see the field, you know, AJ Green, he's just going to see the field. AJ Green probably withers and dies by the end of the season. But
why? Why does he have to? Because let's not even throw out there into the universe.
But like, it's, I don't know. It's just, it's funny to just see how those things swing. And then Devonta Smith on the flip side was someone that I was like, I can't believe this. Like, I'm not taking any Devonta Smith. And he looks, you know, really good early. As I see him steam there in the sixth round, and I was kind of laughing at people that right. were doing that. So I don't know, like just wrapping my head around how to approach the players that seem like they have the best upside versus acknowledging that like we're not great at upside, because there's a line somewhere in the middle that's the appropriate line. I'm just not sure where it is.
When we get to teams, you know, week 8, week 12, what, week 17, I also kind of want to bring up maybe some of these teams as well to see how they're tracking, if they're still not in the top 4 or 5 scores, because these tight ends are going to do absolutely nothing. I mean, we'd be shocked if Austin Hooper and Zach Ertz even touch, you know, top 10 scoring at that tight end position. But I also think that there is some considered and belief upside to some of these players as well. Like maybe Michael Carter in a, you know, post-bye rookie bump, Hayden, or Corey Davis once Zach Wilson, the game starts slowing down for him as the season goes along. Like both of those players, we have yet to see the best production-wise from Odell Beckham, who looks like an absolute stud out there. So I think that like there is still some achievable upside on this team as we roll along, which is interesting.
Did he take 4 quarterbacks?
Yep. He did. Yep. 4 quarterbacks here. So Kyler, Ryan Fitzpatrick in round 12. Carson Wentz in round 14, and close it out with Zach Wilson in round 18.
One strategy Eric and I talked about a little bit, which I would never, first of all, I would never draft 4 quarterbacks, I would never draft 3 quarterbacks with Kyler, but we were kind of talking how the wide receivers were getting pushed up in the draft and like ways to combat that. And one thing that was somewhat interesting to me that I didn't do much though was like taking 3 late quarterbacks where you're eating up an extra spot, but you're also not devoting like any top 10 round capital, which historically has not been a good idea to wait on your first quarterback past, you know, the first 10 rounds. Obviously some guys are off to hot starts this year that would make that look pretty good with Darnold, Daniel Jones, Carr, all the guys that Eric mentioned. But that's something that interests me, where you like sacrifice one skill player spot, but you get better skill players because the ones at the back end of the draft have more uncertainty maybe than years prior. I didn't do it myself too much. And when I did do it, it almost certainly involved 2 of the players rostered on the worst teams that I saw when you put up there, Trey Lance and Justin Fields. But that's got nowhere to go but up, fellas.
But if you paired those guys, if you paired them with Darnold, if you paired them with Daniel Jones, like you're still sitting really pretty. And that was a big thing that I started to do. I was heavy into the elite quarterbacks early in draft season. I think that's a small takeaway, that Everybody sees what Kyler's doing, sees what Josh Allen's doing, right? Mahomes, Lamar, whatever. And I certainly want those guys in my draft portfolio, but we're also seeing what you can get from Sam Darnold in a good offense. Like Sam, and no one, I'm excited for Sam Darnold, but you're not going to catch me saying like he's some awesome real life NFL quarterback. He's just in a situation that's good for fantasy, right? Ryan Fitzpatrick was too. And now look at what Taylor Heinicke is doing, you know, Derek Carr, Daniel Jones, et cetera. And so I think we got so quickly away from the late round quarterback thing. Like that used to be the thing, right? JJ Zacharyson, it made it famous taking late round quarterbacks. And because of what we saw from Kyler and Josh Allen and stuff in a really, you know, what, 1 year, basically 1 or 2 years, all of a sudden we were out on these guys who we perceived to maybe not be as good. And I think that's a nugget to take away too.
All right, let's jump now to the fourth team. This is the first slow draft. This is on July 30th.
Slow draft drafters. We are represented. Draft nation.
Another Derrick Henry led team, another running back start here with Derrick Henry and Joe Mixon. Our first George Kittle shares of this stream, our first Mike Williams share on this stream, which is a little shocking to me that we have not seen him featured in the first three teams as well. But again, you get Derrick Henry, you get Cooper Kupp, you get Deebo Samuel, and you get Marquise Brown. Marquise Brown has been a major difference. So, Pete, I think that this draft is kind of up your alley if you were going to go running back start. Hayden and I did a lot of these this summer too, or talked through a lot of them, where as soon as you go running back, you abandon the position. So you hammer wide receiver Cooper Kupp, quarterback potentially in Josh Allen, Deebo Samuel, Mike Williams, Marquise Brown, Jarvis Landry, and Corey Davis, and then don't take another running back until after round 10.
Yeah. Can you keep scrolling just so I can see the rest of the team? I'm curious what they did with Josh Allen at quarterback, if they did any stacks there. Are there no Manny, Josh Allen?
Emmanuel Sanders.
Okay. Yep. Gotcha. And then Baker is their second quarterback. Yeah. And I loved grabbing that George Kittle discount. I know he hasn't exploded yet, but I think everything still is in play for George Kittle to finish really strong, especially if we get Trey Lance, taking off here. So yeah, I love the structure of this draft. He's already gotten a spike week from Alexander Mattison there with Dalvin Cook out. David Johnson's definitely one that's pretty pricey for David Johnson, considering he would routinely fall. I mean, I literally took him in the last round of a draft at one point this offseason, and he goes into that conversation of the age model bias, but wondering, what are the paths to him paying off there and holding on. But yeah, structurally, I think this is a great team. Rob Gronk, before he got hurt, was one of the better late round picks. Again, a victory against the age model, or for the age model there. So yeah, I like this team.
Hey, Leonie, real quick, I've noticed that it's a bunch of Kyler teams, a bunch of Josh Allen teams, no Steph Diggs, no DeAndre Hopkins. Obviously, that's because they haven't been playing well. But do you think there is something to getting the quarterback and then just getting the second and third options on the team? You're like already pricing in that Steph Diggs is going to be good, but maybe that the two running back starts, they really go to the moon, and you're still using Josh out the Steph Diggs just skill for the Josh Allen. But if Josh Allen has that MVP season, then he's going to drag Cole Beasley or Emmanuel Sanders or Christian Kirk or AJ Green with him.
Yeah. When I researched stacking, you definitely saw like the back end wide receivers got dragged along with the quarterback as far as exceeding their ADP, which for, redraft managed might not mean a whole lot, but for best ball where you can just use their spike weeks, I think matters. And we saw in DFS, there was already a week where the Josh Allen cheap double gets there, especially a guy like Allen, where they throw so much that if he's going to be successful, the cost on the secondary receivers is so low that it's like unlikely they're going to be terrible. Yeah. It's kind of the same concept in DFS. It's like Josh Allen throws the ball 45 times. Like Beasley and Sanders are probably going to have okay lines. Like maybe they don't have the spike weeks, but as long as they're on the field, unlike Gabriel Davis. So, but yeah, I think that's definitely valid. You don't want to get too take locked on like, oh, I can't draft Josh Allen because I didn't draft Stephon Diggs early. And really these offenses that either run at tempo, spread the ball out a lot, or just pass a ton. And like the Bills and the Cardinals check like two of those three boxes. The Cardinals maybe don't throw as much, but they run a fast offense and they spread it out quite a bit. The Bills throw a ton and they're a lot, as a result, they get around the huge Diggs target share.
Hopefully you didn't just say this and I'm not just repeating you, but I think it's very different than like a Patrick Mahomes team, right? Because you basically have to, if you took Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce, that's when you would take Patrick Mahomes, because then they don't have other necessarily pieces that are going to put up anything on a weekly basis. So it's much different in these offenses, like you're talking about, because if Josh Allen is a value and he's dropping in your draft, or Kyler Murray or any of these other quarterbacks that we're talking about, as you just alluded to, you shouldn't stay away just because you don't have their top piece.
And there's no clear two on these teams, right? Like that's the big difference. You've got Kelce and Tyreek Hill are both first round picks. Whereas after Diggs, no one's going in the top 10 rounds. After Hopkins, no one's going in the top 10 rounds. So the cost is just like so dramatically different.
And that's what
opportunity as a result is like the upside is there too, because there's a reason why there's no clear number two.
And it made it very attractive to know you could pull the trigger on an Allen or Kyler without having gotten your knowing you had three legitimate backdoor stack options at very palatable prices. Cause otherwise I'm trying to think like the Dak one or the Lamar would get really scary because it's like, all right, what I'm taking Cedric Wilson and Dalton Schultz. Like that wasn't as attractive as knowing that you'd have, three good Bills wide receivers, just boom, boom, boom for you there.
Right. And you got lucky enough with those guys. Yeah.
Matthew Stafford, light round, last round Van Jefferson works too. Okay. So we've done a few. 628 fast draft, number one overall, 676 points, 667 points, 660. Now we get to a team that does not have Derrick Henry. And this ended on July 16th, draft. Yeah. So basically we have four of the five drafts that either were slow drafts or ended before training camp opened, which is something to keep in mind as well. But again, we're just 4 weeks in. Here we go. This is Jay Freezy out of the 109 position, a Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams start, DeAndre Swift in round three. It's the 308. I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah, the 108. So Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, DeAndre Swift, then Cooper Kupp, Kyler Murray, TJ Hockenson, Mike Williams, Antonio Brown, and then second and third running backs, Zach Moss in round nine, and Gus Edwards in round 10.
And this is double the team, baby. This is the team.
Talk me through it, Pete. Talk me through it.
Well, this is what we were talking about earlier with basically staying within your structure, but flipping it and using DeAndre Swift here as your anchor running back. And he hasn't even gone completely nuclear yet. He's just been almost like a high floor guy. We haven't even seen the ceiling with him. I'll let Eric talk about it because I know he's salivating about this too.
I am. There's one small issue, and it is. The running backs are all handcuffed.
Yeah.
Both Bills, both Lions, and then you have Gus, which is just bad luck. I mean, if Gus was healthy, that's another thing with these couple of teams. There's been Gus Edwards, 11th round Gus Edwards on some of these teams, which would be an absolute smash if he were healthy. But like structurally, if we take apart, set aside the fact that he has Moss and Singletary and Swift and Jamal Williams, which I think some people might argue like, oh, look, I'm guaranteeing myself like a usable week, if you will, from those backfields every week. The problem is that might advance you even, but it's not going to, when you get to the big money tournament weeks, like you kind of need the upside, the different upside shots. You can't be tied only to the Bills backfield and only to the Lions backfield. So that's like if those were different, I mean, this team is an absolute smash. Like structurally, this is like how I would love to build that. Like exactly like what we talked about and like what you said, Pete, right? Like flipping the anchor build a little bit. And now I have the two best wide receivers in football, a really strong anchor, and then, depth running backs and depth wide receivers. And you hit on Cooper Kupp, you hit on TJ Hockenson. And I mean, it's wheels up on a team like this.
What do you guys think about, like, I think the Jamal Williams pick's pretty bad when your anchor running back Swift, like your whole draft strategy is kind of that Swift hits. I am kind of curious about like the double Bills, like at that cost. It's not something I did. I don't think it's a good idea, but like, I'm at least open to you just hitting a lot of weeks that you're using throughout. And you do kind of get a little bit of a ceiling. Like we've seen kind of ceiling performances out of those backs 3 out of 4 weeks so far. When you get to the playoffs, the hard part is you're eating up one roster spot for two guys when you're trying to kind of hit the nuts, but you also have kind of two bets on the same offense, and it's an offense, is going to do really well. So I'm not too sure about that.
I think when the price is that low, you can, it becomes a little more intriguing because, like, in theory, you're burning an 11th round pick. And, like, to win the whole thing, most likely you don't need your 11th round pick. Like, it would be helpful, but that's not going to, like, definitely get you out of the running. So, like, I'm with you. Like, when you got DeAndre Swift, you can't do it. But maybe if it's like the 11th and 12th round running backs on the same team, like maybe there's something to that. That's just like so rare. Like we just never, ever see it. Like I wouldn't do that with James Conner and Chase Edmonds because of price. But maybe like once you get to a deep enough spot, then it can kind of make sense, but probably not.
I kind of think even then the issue is, and maybe I'm a little too focused on kind of truly optimizing, but like, instead of, can you scroll just down a little bit, Josh, to see where he got like Devin Singletary? And so just throwing out names, you know, this is a little bit earlier draft, right? Wouldn't you rather have Daryl Henderson than one of the Bills backs? Wouldn't you rather have Alexander Mattison?
For sure.
You know, one of those guys, like, it, not only is that probably not going to hurt you, your advance rate, but when you get to the playoffs, you might have two like really strong shots at upside weeks, as opposed to like it's not guaranteed that one of the Bills backs are going to have a good fantasy week. Frankly, yeah. Last year, they never really did, you know? So being tied to that when you get to the tournament weeks, I think that's where the issue starts to come in.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting that they did have like a 3-week stretch, you know, where they were kind of the nuts as a pairing. Yeah. But I largely agree. I just was curious about it.
I have my best team in BBM right now is basically this exact same team. I have a 638 points, and it's a start with Adams and Tyreek Hill with Swift anchor with Kyler. But this construction, I think it's definitely onto something here. My running backs on it are Swift, Damian Harris, Tony Pollard, JD McKissick, and Kenneth Gainwell. Although I did lose Fitzpatrick, so I just am raw dogging Kyler now.
So that was the positive in slow drafting before the Aaron Rodgers news, was obviously getting Devontae Adams in round 2.
Oh yeah.
Major positive. By the way, I might be a bit confused and off kilter at the moment. There is water leaking the apartment I'm renting out in Connecticut. So I'm trying to deal with that while hosting a show here live. Not the easiest thing to do.
Are your feet off the ground? Are you like,
no. You know, so it's the place that I own in Connecticut that I just rented 2 months ago. And the water is leaking there. Anyways, we continue to move. Okay. So let's close out with this. The most rostered teams on first place teams and on last place teams. Anything stand out to you all here when I pull it up?
Yeah, you're going to show a whole lot of players that I have on the last place teams.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Did you guys just pull up our exposures?
So A.J. Brown, obviously, who has just completely missed time. Brandon Ayuk at 16.7% on last place teams. Justin Fields, who during the stream has been named the starter for the rest of the season. Dalvin Cook. Wow.
Really?
Allen Robinson, so on and so forth. And Trey Lance. I mean, we talked about it a lot, Eric, how during draft season – the Justin Fields, Trey Lance was going as quarterback 10 throughout. And maybe that will hit, and it hit in, you know, 20 points in just the second half. But this is why maybe looking at just at quarterbacks through the first 4 weeks doesn't tell the entire picture.
Yeah, I think like what I'm really excited for, you know, moving forward, maybe it's perfect timing that we're having this show. Darrington activated off IR, and both the rookies are probably going to be starting at quarterback. But I think that we're quickly starting to see, like, you know, the thesis behind those quarterbacks. Now, Fields hasn't flashed that true upside yet, but I don't think anyone's necessarily arguing that it doesn't exist. I mean, he had like a 13 YPA last week and just didn't get any touchdowns. Meanwhile, Trey Lance, right, comes in, quite frankly, didn't play very good real life football. He's definitely very raw as a passer and reading defenses. But I mean, look what happened. I mean, Lamar wasn't good. Lamar won an MVP and he couldn't read a defense, you know, but when you just run like that and you're in an offense like that, we're already starting to see the power of those guys. And we're starting to see kind of the flaw of some of the, you know, more veteran guys around that range. Like Tom Brady was out to a really hot start. Look what happens when he doesn't throw 5 touchdowns in a week, right? Same thing for Matthew Stafford. When they don't throw for 350 and 4, that's really hard for those guys to pay off. So I'm excited about what we're going to see from those guys, but I also understood that a lot of that was priced in, but I think it was appropriate, and we're seeing why pretty quick.
standouts here? Anyone else? Let me talk about the most rostered too. Cooper Kupp, Derrick Henry, Deebo Samuel, Mike Williams, Rob Gronkowski so far. Kareem Hunt is the one name that we have not seen so far in those top four. I think so often when we go through drafts, it's like, oh, well, Nick Chubb's going to get everything. Like, Nick Chubb is there. He's a beast. But look, that backfield and that offense is so geared around getting both touches and especially high-value touches that Kareem Hunt is absolutely still someone that we should almost eliminate or count as an extra running back starter because he's getting that type of important touches as well.
And I remember when Leone and the ETR crew were reviewing last year's data for the structures, Kareem Hunt stood out to me as the one guy that popped up in both structures for zero RB and hyperfragile as yielding a solid win rate. No matter what construction you were using Kareem Hunt on, he was bringing a higher ROI to your team.
Yeah. Is there something to Kyler Murray only being on 15% of the most rostered teams, even though he's having like an historical start to a season? Like, to me, that just means like maybe the quarterback position, like we were right that you can't be drafting Patrick Mahomes that high. Cause even when Kyler Murray is balling out of his mind and they're 4-0 and he's the current MVP and he was a fifth or sixth round pick, then he's only on 15% of the teams and that's ninth most. So I think it's just kind of something to remind yourself with the quarterbacks is, it might just be all structural because like it's going to be hard for Kyler Murray to be like on 20% of the teams, looks like.
Yeah, you can't draft a quarterback in the first four rounds in the current landscape. I think I was starting to take some of them at like the 5-6 turn, actually quite a bit because I felt like there was a big drop off in the draft. So I took elite quarterbacks there at the 5-6 turn. But man, before that, it's really like you look at the other positions. The reason why those guys can separate so much is because like if I have Deebo Samuel putting up a ton of points, Peter might be getting like 2 points out of his flex spot. Like the amount of points you're picking up on teams is so gargantuan where it's like Kyler Murray goes off, you know, for 32 or something, but like I've got two or three quarterbacks, you know, one of them scores 23. It's like, it's obviously an edge. It's why he's on 15% of the teams. But to your point, Hayden, like the ceiling's just capped a little bit there, which doesn't make him a bad pick. Like you're pumped if you have Kyler Murray.
For sure.
But any earlier, yeah, I agree. Like I had like almost no Patrick Mahomes for that reason. Like I think he's one of my least rostered quarterbacks.
Any closing thoughts before we get out of here, gentlemen? This has been a tremendous discussion. Thank you for doing it. Famous last words.
Yeah.
Only week four, AJ, right, Eric? There's a lot of information.
If AJ Brown remains the number one rostered player on last place teams, it's gonna be a pretty tough scene.
Yes. I'm
already 3 minutes over what my parole officer allowed me to talk about best ball, so I'm gonna let Eric drop the mic with a hot Trey Lance take because the people need it here.
Yeah, Trey Lance is gonna be the league winner. You want Sam Darnold, Trey Lance teams. All this early quarterback talk is nonsense. And that's the reason why Kyler Murray is not on more teams to Hayden's point. No, but seriously, I will talk about best ball because that's what my job is. Peter doesn't talk about it anymore once the season starts. But I think I'm really gonna be interested to see like if we do this again in a few more weeks, kind of see where we stand because once these bye weeks start hitting, right, we saw teams that maybe we didn't like the structure, right, taking only six wide receivers or whatever. That's fine right now. But in week 8, week 10, that's when the structure really, really starts to become important. So I think that's important to remember.
Best ball resurrection is here. Hopefully some of this discussion really helped you in your draft. Again, it's $10 to enter. There's $100,000 in prizes. Those drafts kick off. Well, I should say start playing in week 6 and move on from there. But drafts are going right now and next week as well. Go and try it. It's a lot of fun. Free $10 out of Hayden's pocket. Use promo code Pete or the show. The show works as well. Peter, Eric, Mike, Hayden, thanks for being here. Everyone in the chat, appreciate you being here as well. Willis and Liam, Joshua. We'll be back tomorrow with our game-by-game preview show. You can check out Mike's stuff over at ETR, Eric's stuff over at Spike Week, and obviously Peter's stuff over at Peter Overzet. I'm Josh. That's Hayden. Up the Villa, everyone. Talk to y'all soon. See ya.